Spoiler alert, I watch a lot of Bravo, and when I'm not watching Bravo, I'm sitting in the cloth having a moment of spiritual growth, and when that's not happening, I'm living here in New York where there is a lot to do and not a lot of time to do it. The last thing that I want to be thinking about, let alone worrying about, is my hair. Now, I have wavy hair naturally. It also has color processing, which is surprising because I am a spiritual blonde. And as a result, I don't want to have to worry about frizz. That's why I love Way's anti-frizz cream. It works for my hair texture. It works for having wavy hair. It smells great. There are notes of bergamot, Italian lemon. You guys know I just went to Italy. It was for moments like this, violet and more. Having used a lot of products in my hair in the past, I don't like a heavy feeling, especially when you have wavy hair. That's incredibly important, which is why I love the anti-frizz cream. It makes my hair look like me just a little bit better. Way's new anti-frizz cream provides immediate frizz control that lasts up to 72 hours. It helps reduce and repair split ends. And according to a consumer perception study, 90% of participants agreed that their hair looks less frizzy. And I would like to know what that consumer perception study has to say about some original cast members of The Real Housewives of New York. You'll be way obsessed with Way's bestsellers. They're leave-in conditioner, detox shampoo, hair oil, gloss, and so much more. Frizz-free up your schedule with Way. Go to theouai.com and enter promo code Andy for 15% off any product. That's theouai.com, promo code Andy. C'est bon, c'est bon. With Mother's Day around the corner, are you thinking about a truly special gift for your mom or a maternal figure in your life? Let me tell you about mylifeinabook.com. It's a unique service that turns your mom's life stories into a beautiful book. Pretty cool, right? Here's how it works. Every week, mylifeinabook.com will send her a question via email. These can be pre-written questions about her life or any custom questions you want to ask. Then she can either type up her response or record her voice. And mylifeinabook.com compiles all of her responses into a beautiful keepsake book. And guess what? They can even create an audiobook using her voice recordings. It's like preserving her voice and her stories for eternity. This book becomes a legacy, something you and future generations can treasure forever. Your mom's given you a lifetime of stories. This is your chance to give her a way to share them. I want to know about the stories of how my mom and dad grew up. What's the first thing they remember after they were born? That's one of the questions I sent to my dad after signing up for My Life in a Book. And I can't think of a greater gift to give my dad in sharing his stories and to receive. It's super easy to use. My favorite part of it, as someone who sometimes lives on turtle time and forgets about sending or receiving email, is that they reach out a couple days prior to sending questions, just so I know of what questions they're going to send to my dad, if I want to change it for another question or customize it with something that I want to know. It's that kind of specificity and care that I love so much. This is genuinely an incredible, incredible gift. There's no greater present than I could give a family member or a loved one than to participate in this kind of meaningful appreciation for the entirety of their lives, separate from my own. Check out mylifeinabook.com and use code AndySgirls at checkout for 10% off. Create an unforgettable gift for your mom or loved one this Mother's Day. That's mylifeinabook.com. with code Andy's Girls for 10% off today. And thank the Jills Aaron and your life and mine. You can call me a sore loser, but in the end, I always win.
Your words can't hurt me, but seasonal allergies, that's a different story.
It's Andy's Girls. I literally put on my little note thing with your bio that I absolutely did not clear before we started recording that it's episode 282. It's like literally
three. The number has to be over 300 because I was at your fucking live show.
It's 100%, I think, 302-ish. And in my brain, I was like, oh, it's definitely 282. That tells you what happens when I take a week off. That literally goes to show. But I took a couple of days off to have a little nap, and I am back and ready to go. You guys, it's Andy's Girls. It's episode whatever. Don't worry about it. And I'm so excited to have one of my favorite people, my Bravo BFF. He is here. He is in the clawfist. We are vaccinistas, excited to mention it all. And listen, guys, you know him as content manager, pop culture at Betches Media, host of the Pop Alarm podcast, as well as Mention It All, and creator of Bravo by Betches. I hope that bio was okay. Welcome back to Andy's Girls, Dylan Hafer.
Thank you. Thank you. More than okay. What a pleasure.
Any of that wrong?
No.
It was right? Because I grabbed it from the last time you were on.
Yeah, my life has not changed that much in the last however long it's been. But I'm very excited to be in the clawfist. I feel like I'm in, I don't know, like, it feels like if I, like, the only cooler places we could be recording would be, like, the Capri Room. Mm. Or, like, but the Capri Room probably would have worse acoustics.
Yeah, that'd be tough.
I really want to go. I'm going to be in LA later this week. And the thing is, like, going to Sir or Tom Tom feels like a very low lift. Mm-hmm. But I honestly would love to go to the Buca di Beppo in Encino. But that feels very out of the way. And I just don't know if I'm going to get there.
What is, not to be dumb, but, like, Encino is that where the people... Is that where, like, they live? Like,
yes.
Tom Schwartz and stuff? Didn't they buy in Encino?
No, Tom Schwartz. No, they live elsewhere in
Video Village. Not Video Village.
Not Video Village.
They live in Hollywood.
They live in Valley Village.
Okay.
Yeah, but Encino is where Kyle and Dorit live.
Whoa, Kyle's in Encino?
Yes, so that's the whole thing. It's funny because it's like Real Housewives of Beverly Hills, but Kyle, Dorit, Garcelle all live in the Valley at this point. But it's like close Valley.
Wait, I'm shaken because I just don't look at Kyle's new residence as being
right.
Encino. Well, I think I'm sure I thought it was Beverly Hills.
I mean, I'm not like an LA expert, but I spend a lot of time on Google Maps, and the impression I get is that Kyle is in like one of the bougier parts.
Yeah, I mean,
it's like, obviously, it's insane. Like a nice part of the Valley, but mm-hmm. I think like that sprawling, you know, mansion and yard would probably be like twice as expensive if it was in Beverly Hills. I don't know.
I mean, and if Selling Sunset has taught us anything, it is that people are willing to spend in the Valley.
Right. I mean, Chrishell is trying to get her first listing over 10 million, and clearly 10 million can buy you a lot in the Valley. But yeah, if you, I don't know off the top of my head anybody's addresses, but like, I won't tell you to go like Google Dorit's home address because somebody else already did. But like, you could find potentially her house on Google Maps and see that the Buca di Beppo is like sort of around the corner. It's very close. It was very convenient for her when she had to be there working every day with a hard hat and a hammer.
Right. And the thing is that if you do go, and I think you should go for humanity, I'm going to need you to steal me a plastic lemon. You know that they have replacements. You know that they have extras. I need one for the clawfist. I need one or nine.
The problem with Buca di Beppo is that it's not, I don't feel like that's a place that you can just kind of like see from a sightseeing perspective.
No, I think you have
like,
to go, you have to eat there.
Do I have to eat there and be like, could I please be sat in the Capri Room? Because that feels humiliating. Also, I'm going to LA for 3 days. I only have so many meals.
You're not
going to
eat there.
While I'm there, I don't want to eat Buca di Beppo for one of those meals.
I don't think
meals.
You should. I think you should go and have a glass of rosé. I think that would actually be iconic in one of those weird plastic, and you are going to steal me a fucking plastic lemon. This is a friendship contract.
I'm going to take a duffel bag and steal everything.
Okay, great. And some silverware and stuff.
But only from the Buca di Beppo, not from Dorit's house.
I mean, listen.
Why am I making jokes about Dorit's robbery?
We have to talk about it. Guys, if you go on the Andy's Girls Patreon, I did a 40-minute plus It was the first time I had seen the trailer. I did a live reaction as I typically do. And then I went through it like morsel style and was doing a stop and start to because there was so much. But we have to talk about that. We have to talk about the trailer for Beverly Hills. We have to talk about it.
Yes. I'm really glad that you finally sat down to watch it because I know
took me a minute.
I know that you were mostly offline over the last few days, but I'm sure you had seen little, you know, inklings and pieces because there were some extremely clippable moments in that preview, specifically to me, top highlight, number one moment of everything is Garcelle saying, I don't need to make you look bad, Erica. You can do that on your own. Cause that is, I feel like Garcelle, this is her third season. And it feels like even just from this trailer that like
straight to the top.
Season after season, mm-hmm. she really has come into her own mm-hmm. as a housewife. And
right.
I think her first season, there was kind of that criticism that it's like, she's not around as much.
Right.
She doesn't necessarily like seem invested in kind of being a part of the group. And then I think her second season, it really felt like she was present and accounted for and mm-hmm. really engaging more. And then, you know, coming from this trailer, it really feels like she is kind of taking, you know, if there are, let's say, like three center diamonds to mm-hmm. be had, it feels like she's kind of growing into that spot in the cast.
Wow.
I mean, obviously, like, we haven't seen the season yet, so that might be, like, a false impression from the trailer. But it feels like Garcelle really has that presence that maybe a couple seasons ago she wasn't quite giving in that, like, housewife sense of things.
Who would you put in the other two?
From the trailer, I think you have to say Erica just because it seems like so much of the conflict is still going to hinge on her stuff. And I would say because I said three, I feel like I have to only do three, but I would say it's maybe between Kyle and Rinna just because I think like last season I would have not given Rinna the time of day, but based on this trailer, it feels like maybe she's kind of going back to her housewife roots of being an awful person, which I like for her.
Mm-hmm. She does it best.
She does it. It's what she does best. And I think the last couple seasons, or maybe even longer, it's felt like she's kind of doing this dance of like, I want to be likable, but also I'm not that likable, but I don't know. I have to, like, she's playing this character almost, but it's like she's at her best as a housewife, I think, when she is not playing the character, because she is kind of like such a bad friend that it's like, when she's trying to control that, it's like, okay, you still seem like sort of a bad friend, but you're like trying not to show us that. And I'd rather, it's the same. It's like Camille season one versus season two, that it's like, if you're like a toxic bitch, I'd kind of rather just see that than mm-hmm. see you do some weird performance art of being, oh, Garcelle, I would rather just kind of see her lean into that. And I'm hoping that this season, you know, like, if you want to be a villain, just want to be a villain.
I mean, it looks like she really wants to be a villain in a way that, you know, like, Brandy was really toxic. And I think some of the ways that she sort of got in the middle of all things Richard Sisters was both because she wanted to, like, stir it and make things happen. And also because I think she's just a naturally toxic personality. And with Rinna, you know, she's thinking of what plays on TV. She's genuinely thinking through the lens of soap opera. But it does appear that she really kind of gets off on this. Like, there's something about making people fracture or feel bad mm-hmm. through the lens of, like, sibling rivalry specific to the Richard sisters, but then also with the women on the show, even as friends, like the Yolanda stuff and whatever else, she seems to really delight in it. And no one's really truly called her out.
Yeah. And I think, you know, Yolanda, obviously, I don't think she would have stayed on the show forever, but she didn't, mm-hmm. you know, she left after kind of that Munchausen debacle with the Lyme disease and all of that. For better or for worse, Denise left after the season mm-hmm. that Rinna was kind of giving her the most shit. And I think there haven't been a lot of, like, the kind of the foremost targets of Rinna's stuff haven't really stayed on the show to kind of force her to deal with that. And I think maybe Garcelle is one of those people where it's like, I'm not going anywhere. So Lisa, you have to actually like deal with the aftermath. And mm-hmm. like, if you can say that you want to be work on our friendship and be a better friend, but because I'm staying on the show, if you're going to say that, if you don't mean it, we're going to see you not mean it. You
right.
know, with somebody like Denise, she can be like, I feel really bad about what happened with Denise, but Denise isn't on the show anymore. So if she says she feels bad, then nobody's really there to
counter.
Question that. Mm-hmm. And it's like, but if you say you feel bad about how you treated Garcelle and then you treat Garcelle just as bad the next season, we can all see that you didn't mean it. So I think I'm like rooting for Rinna to be a good friend in certain ways. Like I want her to like be there for Garcelle. But then when it comes to like Kyle and Kathy, I'm like, yeah, honestly, throw the grenade. I don't really care. It seems fun to me.
Do you have any idea what's behind whatever Kathy is saying about Kyle? Because I watched that scene in the
Not
trailer.
A clue. Was,
right? Like, I don't know. I honestly didn't have an inkling that there was something going on. And yet I'm watching that moment and I'm watching how easily Kyle is giving permission to have Rinna involved in
right?
what is a multi-layered, complicated dynamic with another sibling. And I got into depth about this on the Patreon, but like, how has Kyle so easily forgiven Lisa Rinna, just even in the context of like familial dynamics, for saying that her other sister was soon to die? Like, why would you involve this person in another complicated dynamic with your older sister after what she said about Kim? I don't understand the level of trust.
It's not funny, but the close to death comment just makes me laugh every single time
it's
because
psychotic.
It's so absurd.
No, the best part is about it is in fucking Mexico when they were there for the agency and Rinna's like, I don't think I said it. Like, it doesn't sound like something I would say.
You know what that also just makes me think of? Which is like different context, but when
what?
When Aviva compared Sonia to Anna Nicole Smith.
She was like, it's a compliment.
And,
she was a star.
And Heather Thompson saying, she died, Aviva.
Aviva was like, she was really popular.
No, she was beautiful. She was iconic. Like, she died, Aviva.
That's not how you meant it. You were like Marilyn.
Yeah.
That's how I intended.
No, I think, yeah, I mean, Lisa Rinna, I think, is in an interesting position as a housewife in general, that she kind of has that spiritual OG status in a way, just because since LVP left, it really has felt like she and Kyle are kind of like the like tent poles of the franchise in a way. But then also to counter that, it's like she has that status because of longevity on the show, which I respect. But then also I think she's kind of in this weird like no man's land of maybe some of the women in the cast are still really good friends with her because there's, or at least like allied with her in that weird like Fox Force way. But in terms of the viewership, I think she really is kind of at sea in term like with her reputation and with kind of the fans of the show, because I feel like as somebody who is, I mean, runs an Instagram account with a couple hundred thousand followers who all watch this show, I feel like there are a lot of housewives who divide public opinion. But I gotta say, I don't feel very much love for Lisa Rinna the last year or so. And it's like, even a housewife like with New Jersey this season posting about it, whenever you post about Margaret or Teresa or Jackie or, I mean, kind of anyone, you get comments that are just hateful. And then you get comments that are like, oh, fucking love her. Same with OC. Anytime you post about Heather Dubrow, you're going to get comments that are like, she's such a fake bitch and I don't understand why, blah, 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 blah. But then you're also getting like, Queen Heather saving the franchise. And I think with most housewives, and honestly, probably with like the best housewives, you get that back and forth, and that is like healthy. Mm-hmm. I mean, until it's not, but until it's too toxic. Mm. But with Lisa Rinna, at least from the side of social media that I come into contact with, which is like a pretty broad audience, I feel like Lisa Rinna is like kind of almost universally disliked.
And how much of that do you think helps her in relation to her friendship with like Erica Jayne? Because Erica has received, obviously, you know, waves of very, very, very deep dislike publicly and otherwise. Rinna's obviously been used to it. I wonder how much of that adds itself to like almost being a little bond for the two of them.
I wonder about that this season, how Lisa Rinna is going to kind of deal with phase two of the Erica of the Erica scandal, because obviously last season she seemed very reticent to ask any questions, just kind of like she was drifting along and was like, well, Erica's our friend, it would be pretty messed up for us to ask questions,
right?
And I whatever, she chose her side. But this season, if the Erica, I have a feeling that Erica's position in the group this season is not, or like maybe her issues with people in the group are not going to be as laser focused on the Tom thing.
Really?
I mean, it just feels like the way that she's talking to Garcelle and the stuff, you know, it just feels like maybe people are going to be a little more like done with her shit in a general sense versus just like, I want to ask questions about what you knew, because I mean, you can't keep having the same conversation over and over and over again. But at a certain point, if Erica is being so nasty and so rude to Sutton and to Garcelle based on questions they've asked or anything, like at a certain point, they're just like not going to like her because of her personality, not because she like may have scammed money out of orphans or and widows. So it's like, I think maybe the root cause will still be the Tom stuff, but I have a feeling that the some of the conflicts will feel a little less centered on that, which I'm actually excited for, because I think that was one of, I didn't have an issue with it last season, but I think you always have to wonder when there's such an intense like scandal or something, that it's like, okay, like I am really interested in this, but also like we can't only talk about this for 20 episodes a season in perpetuity. And so I think this year it's going to be intriguing to see kind of like how the group dynamic like evolves and changes in regard to the Erica situation, because there hasn't actually been like, I feel like since they filmed last season's reunion to now, or to like when they were filming this season 12, I mean, there haven't been like monumental changes in Erica's situation. It's not like there's like a new bombshell article coming out every week. So it's, it was, I think it's kind of like with Beverly Hills or with Salt Lake this past season, people were like, why are they talking about Jen Shah as much as they talked about Erica? And it's like, cause Jen Shah was charged and indicted and arraigned. And now she's awaiting trial. And so there isn't new information. And so it's like, I don't want to have the conversation if there's nothing new to talk about. So I don't know. We'll see.
I mean, with Erica, too, it's, you're bringing up so many interesting points. And the one that I kind of focus on after watching the trailer and watching her reaction to Crystal is both. Oh God, I feel like the first part of it is like, this is a woman who's just so obviously unkind. And at what point, regardless of the amount of stress that you're under and feeling like you're constantly under attack, are you held accountable for being a dick to your friends? And I use friend circle in the, to your cast. Like, if you're going to act like a twat to this person and be incredibly sharp and cruel and rude, regardless of the fact that it involves actual victims, and you seem to take that as a joke or an affront. I mean, at what point are you held accountable for just being a little bit of a twat?
Yeah, I think that's what I mean with like when saying like that people like Garcelle and Sutton are just going to start to dislike her on a, in a general sense, that it's like, yeah, like if somebody, even if there was a specific reason why you had a disagreement in the first place, if somebody's just being like an asshole to you for 2 years, you're not going to be like, oh, well, she is nice and I do like her, but one time we had a disagreement. You're going to be like, no, she's like kind of a bitch.
Yeah, and not she's always been like, yes, queen, like, bitch. And it's like, you know what? She's actually like, a bitch.
Right.
A bitch.
Right. Not like.
I'm not.
Not like bitchy in a this is her thing. It's like, no, she just like is mean. Kind of a shitty person.
She's like actually kind of a shitty person, though. And it's, I feel like we don't talk about that enough because she's been under stress or whatever and people have defended her. But the thing is, like, she's, when someone shows you who they are, believe them. She's not a nice person. A lot of people give her the benefit of the doubt.
Yeah.
But it's actually not deserved. She tells us repeatedly that she's not a good person. She's making fun of the victims and of people who are asking about them. She's not even addressing or dealing with the fact, because I don't think she, and this is, I'm going on a lot of different, so feel free to rein me in, but like, I don't think she believes that those people are victims. I think she believes that people are coming after her and it's everybody against her. And if you ask any questions, you're in that group. And I do believe she puts the victims in that dynamic in such a way that it's to me ludicrous. It makes me think that she really doesn't believe that what happened was wrong.
Well, the moment in the trailer, and correct me if I'm misremembering this, I think she
I watched asked, it 85 times.
Right, I know you did. And she asks Crystal, I think, if Crystal is showing sympathy for the victims because she thinks it's
cool.
Like cool or trendy or whatever. And it's like, that is so
fucked up.
Yeah, I'm interested to see that in context. But like, I can't imagine a way that will not seem like an absolutely wild out-of-pocket thing to say.
Yeah.
Because it's like, regardless of what Crystal has decided or her thought process journey, because, I mean, they've all been dealing with this for over a year now. Like,
right.
Trust me, they've all had plenty of time to ponder and think and consult and whatever. But, like, the fact that after all of this shit, it's like, that's where Erica's, like, mind is still at, that it's like, you sign in, you're going to make people think that I'm bad because you want publicity and you want to look good. So you're going to say that the victims are important. And it's like,
they are.
It's like, so she's like literally like 100 steps behind the eight ball of like what is actually happening. And it's like, no, from day one, like even last, you know, like last year when at the reunion, when it's like, when she's like, what do you want me to say? That like, that I don't want those people to have their money. And it's like, you literally are just making yourself look so like heartless in a way that it's like, even if you are, I just don't understand why people like tell on themselves so much. I was talking about this on Mention It All today. We were talking about the way that on Summer House this season, they had that like really raw conversation when Maya was feeling kind of like disrespected by people in the house, and about
microaggressions and triggers
They had what I think most people saw as like a really
incredible,
meaningful, impactful conversation, and everybody like showed up to that conversation in the way that was appropriate. And I was saying that it's like, first of all, I know it's like a generational divide. I think in general people, like millennials will say probably have an easier time having those conversations than boomers, like, you know, like Ramona. But it's like, also, I was saying that even if I were coming from a purely cynical place, they understand that it's like, if you're on a TV show that people are going to watch and be critical of how you're acting, that it's like, it's probably a better look to come into this conversation about race, not spouting off your like ignorant, like white nonsense. Whereas like, I don't understand why some people on these shows don't realize like the way they're going to come off. That it's like,
I don't know that I buy. I don't think it's generational. I think it's situational. I know that you're not wrong.
It's not only,
but I don't believe that it's an age only, thing. I think it's like Erika Jayne has lived in the, Erika Jayne is 50 and Kyle's what, 38? That's not a big difference in age.
No, it's not.
But it's environment. It's the world in which you've lived.
The generational thing is like an aside, I guess, but I don't understand like why somebody in Erica's position still doesn't realize that it's like, regardless of how I actually feel, whether maybe I give no fucks about the victims, but like you really can't wrap your mind around the fact that people, you are on TV and you are going to look bad if you don't pretend to care about the victims. And I don't think that, you know, it just is like kind of wild to me that some people on these shows can't just like fake it, just like pretend, like act like you care.
Well, that's the thing with Erica.
Act like you're not racist. If you don't want to have people,
they don't know how. Because they don't believe that they are. Like, the thing with Erika Jayne is that she says at the reunion, of course I've done these things. Of course I've talked about the importance of being a victim. When she literally didn't during, but she's like, she comes from the perspective of like, you have to assume that I feel these things. I demand that you make those assumptions. And then in the trailer for next season, she's like, how dare you even consider them? You should be understanding why I can only take into account myself. And if you are putting into the conversation considerations for people, quote unquote, victims, it is a direct attack. And you're putting me into a mode in which I have to seek and destroy. Like, that's the Erica conundrum to me is both her demanding that we assume the best of her while she always assumes the worst of everybody else, including, most importantly, the people who were defrauded, who might be watching the show, watching her wear that motherfucking Panther ring. Like, I don't know. It's a question I need to have Andy Scrolls' official legal correspondent, Emily D. Baker, back on soon, because, like, it is a question when it comes into the idea of the way that she is fighting things in court versus essentially misrepresenting what is her legal strategy, which she has every right to have on the show. At a certain point, it's like, so we're not going to take ownership. And I understand the legal part of it, of not feeling like you should, but to whatever the reverse of disarming is, the ways that she's reacting and responding, it's just honestly gross.
Yeah. Well, I mean, maybe she's wearing the Panther ring, but I gotta say, those new promo looks, hers looks kind of cheap, so.
Except that crown scene, I was like, Leila, whatever the name of her assistant is, who I truly never remember. I'm so sorry. But, you know, she's been doing some of the glam. Like, she still, I think, has a hair person. But, like, for glam, she...
That makeup, the blush?
But the crown look, I thought, was great.
She did look good. I remember...
She looked amazing.
I remember when that party happened on social media. And I think... I mean, like, she can still give... She can give good costume. But it's, like, those promo looks that where they're all wearing silver.
Mm-hmm.
For the most part, like, everybody looks pretty expensive. We're not going to look expensive.
Well, she probably didn't pay for it because that's a cast thing. It's not like she had to supply her own glam, like with scenes.
Not the glam. Like, her dress looks cheap.
Oh. Well, then that
it looks like
no
honestly,
for.
It looks like a drag costume almost.
I mean, that's my goal every day. So.
But not like a good like.
Like a Wednesday instead of a Saturday.
Like a
Tuesday night.
The queen at the local bar like sewed this, and she's like not. She's like starting out in drag.
You know that Erica's like, I can give you such a great opportunity to work on my... Erica's going to go the way of Sonia Morgan with her volunteers.
Yeah, she's going to be like, look, baby. You're going to come to my house all this week. It's going to be such good exposure.
Oh, my God.
Bravo's going to post who the designers.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll 85% sure I'll spell your name right when I tell it to them.
I mean that I, you're
it's gonna
not
go the
wrong.
Way of Shannon's reunion look with
Which,
bones.
Jesus oh. Christ! And oh. then he, and then he said on social something along the lines of like, "I didn't have her measurements and I only had 2 days." And it's like, sweetie, if you didn't have her measurements, and you only had 2 days. You get those measurements and you make more time because what you delivered, that yellow look, was awful.
It was so bad.
It was awful.
And I wanted to be, Okay, I think, however, that story got leaked to the press, aka directly from Shannon, was shitty, I think, to like put him on blast like that. But I do, so like in that sense, I'm on his side. But then in the other sense, it's like the dress was bad.
The dress was bad. And she did, she gave you such, she essentially did the favor of saying that you styled it when someone had to fucking run out and very quickly buy her a dress because what you gave her was not going to work. You can't look at that dress as a designer and think like this isn't, we're not on Project Runway anymore. This is IRL.
Right. And like, especially something like, it's not like something that she's wearing to a dinner party. It's like, it's a thing now that housewives reunion looks are picked apart and immortalized and you know they release the photos and all the Bravo accounts post them and do polls and you know who wore it better, and then of course we watch it on the TV screen and it's forever and ever when somebody goes and watches binges Real Housewives of Orange County on Peacock or whatever, we're all gonna see that dress until the end of time. And I think like, I mean, there have been plenty of like unflattering reunion looks. It's not the, I don't think it's a, I don't think it's like a thing that has an especially high success rate in terms of like people looking amazing at reunions. But it's like, there are some bad reunion dresses that are like etched in my brain. And especially after, after Shannon's reunion look last season, she needed a win.
She did. And I do think
she looks good. She looks phenomenal. She looks good in the dress they ended up getting for her. Which I'm relieved. I mean, I we've talked about Shannon before. I don't feel the same way you do about her. But, like, Mama needs a win.
I mean, Mama does need a win.
Do you feel like this season... I don't know if we've talked about OC this season at all.
I don't think we have a lot, but I love talking about it.
Do you feel like this season has been, in any way, a win for Shannon?
Well, it's hard for me to discuss that. Because I know what's coming because word on the street about the reunion, which yada yada, is that it's going to be very, very bad for Shannon. It's like the entirety of the reunion is Shannon is under attack, which is not surprising considering the lead up to the season finale, which I think is the next episode, is Shannon's under attack. But I think, what was even your question? Because now I'm thinking about Shannon under attack.
Just how you feel like this season has gone for Shannon, because I know you're invested.
I think it's going, I'm extremely invested. I think it's going well in the sense that I'm hearing for, from people that they understand Shannon a little better than they have before. But for the purposes of like the interpersonal dynamics with the cast, it couldn't be going worse because she and Gina are fighting through Emily in such a way that they're not even... It's like they're not even really, they're mad at each other because of an interpretation that's been given to them. It's more Gina against Shannon than it is Shannon against Gina. And it's just so frustrating because you would think leading up to the reunion, these women would have seen the footage. And I think Gina is so steadfast in her anger toward Shannon, but it's like all through the lens of what Emily told her, that I think that's a difficult thing for Shannon to have to deal with, because how much of an interpretation should she have to take responsibility for?
This is, I think, my favorite of Emily's seasons. Agree. I think she's had her best season kind of by far.
Yeah.
But
honestly, for all of them, to be honest. Yeah. Everybody's having a good season.
Gina, I mean, the last couple episodes, I think some people are kind of like fed up with Gina.
But even if I don't agree with her, I'm still really enjoying her.
Yeah. And I think Emily this season has played a very important role of kind of the bone carrier. She's kind of played telephone in both directions. But I also think she's done it in a little bit of an inelegant way, because Gina and Shannon both know for a fact that Emily is the one that has kind of been, you know, spilling their, the tea out of, you know, both ends of the kettle or whatever. I don't know what that is, but
I'm into that.
But yeah, I think Shannon's in a little bit of a tough spot, because clearly neither Emily nor Gina care that much about their friendships with Shannon. And I think Heather, going into this season, I think Shannon likely saw potential for a couple of different scenarios with Heather, either that they could sort of team up and let bygones be bygones and kind of like go into a new era as like a dynamic duo, or maybe that they would kind of continue their issues from the past and be like iconic rivals or something. Mm. But it's almost like the thing that's actually happened is sort of like worst case scenario for Shannon, that in the first few episodes of the season, they fought, Heather put her in her place, they agreed to sort of, you know, put it to bed. Mm-hmm. But Heather doesn't seem to be really interested in giving Shannon the time of day.
Right.
It's like, okay, like they're they seem pretty cordial with each other. For the most part, they haven't been clashing that much this season. But I don't think it's because they're becoming friends. I think it's because Heather doesn't really like care. And I think in terms of Bravo looking at what to do with Orange County, I think they likely feel like they've invested a lot of resources into the return of Heather. And so, like, I've seen some people saying, like, do you think Heather will be back for another season? And I'm like, yes.
Yeah.
Because I don't think they would want to. First of all, I don't think they need to admit failure, because I don't think it's a failure this season. But also, I don't think they would want to sort of acknowledge that, oh, we hyped up the return of Heather so much and then it didn't go the way we thought it would. I think Heather has done fine this season. I think Heather has given us kind of what was to be expected from Heather. Mm-hmm. And I think most likely the way they would want to go is bringing on some of Heather's IRL friends next season. And I hope and pray Tamra. And I think that Tamra coming back, I want to see it, but I also think it's kind of like it would be a little bit of a life raft for Shannon, just because it would be a guaranteed storyline.
Oh, I was about to, I gave you no, absolute eyes.
No. Not because I think that it would be a friend for her, but I think that it would give her a compelling arc of people want to see what's going on between Shannon and Tamra.
But the thing is, and this is so unfair of me, but you know, I love my Shan. I do stand I know you for do. My I know. Shan. I know. I love my Shan. It's like the idea of there's no such thing as bad press because you're getting attention. With Shannon, I don't think she would care about that, even though she needs the check. With Shannon being under attack in the way that she is, Tamra coming back, and you know Tamra would seek and destroy, and it would be, I just think, like, I don't know how much of that Shannon could handle, because Tamra so obviously is out for blood, hers specifically, that I'm concerned for Shannon in that spot. I also don't think it would be dynamic, interesting storyline, because she would just become undone. And we've seen Shannon undone before. It's actually pretty dark. And for her to be at the spot that she's in, feeling as vulnerable as she is, not having the support of David and whatever capacity he was willing to do, but like, even just from a superficial level, she's just much more vulnerable. And I get nervous about that, because I don't think it would be fireworks. I think it would be someone, unfortunately, like blowing off their fucking hand, you know?
Yeah. And I do think you're right in the sense that, like, what I was saying with Heather this season, for the first, you know, couple of filming events, she really was like laying into Shannon, and she was like, we're done here. Leave. Like, she shut down the sushi party. It was the whole thing. But then once they did the pinky promise, she kind of was like, okay, like, I'm above this. I don't.
Well, yeah. And she also turned her sights on Noella, or Noella turned her sights on her. Yeah.
Slamming people into. But then I think what you're saying about Tamra is like, if Tamra came on the show, she is not like, you know, like, if Heather's like the kind of like animal that's gonna, like, you know, play with the bone for like a couple minutes and then get bored and like go look at something else. Tamara's not gonna stop with the bone until the bone is like done.
She's like, gonna jab that bone directly into your like carotid artery and watch you bleed out.
Right. Like, if
and she's gonna be like, how dare you leave?
Because
a mess.
Heather is a producer in the sense that she wants to have control of what's going on.
Right.
Tamra is a producer in the sense that she is
going to harm you.
Going to give you what you want no matter what.
And like, by you, she means the audience, regardless of who she actually harms.
Exactly. And so I think, like, for in terms of
more feral Lisa Rinna. A more feral Lisa Rinna.
A Lisa Rinna with less to lose, maybe.
Yeah.
Tamra doesn't have shit to lose. But what? She's selling her CBD gummies. Other than that, did Cut Fitness ever reopen? Unclear.
Oh, did it?
I don't know.
Wow, that would be the end of an era. No, it has to be there. Maybe they're doing like online stuff.
I
think stuff. It is.
I know they were closed for a while during the pandemic, but I'm sure
it's reopened.
I feel like we would have heard if it was like,
yeah, that would
Dunzo.
Be a thing. 100% that would be a thing.
What are your thoughts on if Vicky comes back? Like, would you?
Oh, or no. If,
no?
What?
Okay.
Nobody's saying that.
No, but like I've seen people. I don't think
I've seen Christian, friend of the pod, say that repeatedly.
Yeah, no,
every single day.
I just see like some people are like, oh, well, if Tamara came back, it would be fun to have Vicky as a friend.
No, it wouldn't.
Okay.
I'm good.
I agree. I don't want that.
I don't want that.
I'm nervous enough as it is for Ultimate Girls Trip too.
It sounds not good. Like, I hate to say it, but like, it's the Brandy levels of chaos that make me a little uncomfortable, where it gets very dark. And I think I don't even attribute that to Brandy. I'm just saying with the Vicky versus Dorinda yelling at each other about science, I don't think that's going to be entertaining. I think it's just going to be frustrating.
I'm curious, like, after we've heard a lot of sources from the filming of that show, mm-hmm. but obviously we've seen nothing,
right.
No kind of trailer, mm-mm. No footage. And so I'm really curious to see what happens with that show in editing, in post-production, because like, are they going to leave in Vicky screaming about vaccines?
I think that's at the heart of it.
I mean, I hope that they do, just because, first of all, it sounds entertaining, because I'm a masochist, apparently. But also, like, I want people to watch the show and, like, see Vicky for who she is. Like, I don't
oh,
want...
Oh, that's a good point.
I don't want... I mean, first of all, I think Girls Trip 1 I enjoyed, but was kind of light on the drama.
Which I liked,
but I'm excited for this kind of more, like, action-packed version. But also, it's like, I don't want people to watch this show and be able to be like, oh, like, Vicky's off her rocker. Ha, ha, ha. Like, I want people to watch this and be like, no, she's, like, a toxic old lady.
What is this ageist stuff?
She just turned 60.
She looks
great. She had, like,
great.
Three different birthday parties. She's
whatever.
Like, no, she's like this.
I think it's because I just had my
she's
birthday.
She's, like, this toxic nightmare.
There we go. That's better.
Yeah. Like, I think that is, like, kind of the thing. And, I mean, you and I have talked, chatted offline about one Ms. Kelly Leventhal recently.
yes.
And like, we don't have to get into it, but it's like, I think there is something to be said for like,
yes.
I can put aside someone's politics when I'm watching a show
100%.
Because like, it's not always about that.
Absolutely.
But like, there's a certain point where it's like, you have to like understand that some of these people are like bad and like, rough. And like, with somebody like Vicky, I feel like when she was on the show, it was before we were having a lot of like conversations about race in America, mm-hmm. or like things like that. Like, she never really had to like do that when she was on Housewives, and I think that probably salvaged bits and pieces of her reputation, because I have a feeling if she was like Ramona and was like on OC when, you know, she missed the whole Black Lives Matter season when people were mm-hmm. coming for Bronwyn for, like, taking pictures at a protest. And it's like, I don't think that would have made Vicky look very good if she was on that season.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, with somebody like her, I'm like, okay, good. Like, go on there. Talk about vaccines. I hope they leave it in. Because, like, I think it's going to, like, wash off the like,
luster of...
Yeah, like, the idea that a lot of people have of, like, she's the OG. That it's like, okay, what? So what? Like,
well, I feel like the purpose of this upcoming spinoff is like the dark underbelly, but like, it's entertainment, and there is something to be said for, you know, I got this satchel of gold, and guys, in Andy's Girls parlance, satchels of gold are your thoughts and feels, questions and concerns about Housewives and Bravo content and specific episodes, and send them to me in my DMs on Instagram. But anyway, I got this satchel that I've been holding on to because it's so interesting and dynamic, and I just need to spend 6 hours of it on Patreon. But it's essentially somebody saying, in essence, you know, when it comes to a housewife of differing political ideology, how are you able to process that through the lens of your affection for them? Which is such an interesting point, and one that I've really thought about, because I think I was... I think I have come to a better understanding of the ways that I myself was blocking people out and not willing to look at someone as a human person. I was only looking at them as their political ideology. I think it's because during the height of the Black Lives Matter protests, during the height of COVID, when I just myself was, I don't know that it was like an active participant in cancel culture, but they're just in essence, there were things that I said on the pod or on social that I wouldn't say now. I think that I am more interested in muddling in the gray a little bit. But all that being said, like, you know, this person referenced Shannon, which I thought was a great example of, like, you know, she is likely a conservative. How do you measure your affection for her? Like, where do you introduce political thoughts and opinions into the dynamic of liking this person? And I just kind of think my response to that is, like, when it comes to Kelly or Vicky, I don't look at them first through the fact that we have political differences. I look at them as trash people. And with Kelly, and maybe with Vicky, they are two people. It's probably not fair to Vicky to put her at that level, but like, because of just Vicky's importance to Housewives as a whole, but like, these are people who are, in more Kelly than not, like, in need of a Bravo edit, where if you allow them to just speak without a filter, you might find them much less entertaining than you would in an ensemble quasi comedy. And I like think of the Vicky on the spinoff stuff and I'm like, oh, this is going to be tough, because even though she will be on a edited Bravo show, there is an element here of protection that she maybe had and that Kelly had in years past, where, you know, you thought she was good for the show or valuable for the show, but like isn't necessarily a good person in such a way that crosses a line in a universe that's made up of people who, you know, through the value system of good, err on the side of not. And so, like, for me, when it comes to political ideology, I want to focus more, like, Emily, to me, we have, I'm sure, extreme political differences. I'm really liking her as a person, noting that she's, like, a truth teller, a shitster, like, closer on the side of shitstering the season. But I really am enjoying understanding her in a different way. And it's, like, I don't know. I think there's a way for us to have a conversation where we should be able to talk about things without immediately saying, well, this person supported, you know, a political stance, a political candidate or an ideology, so I'm unwilling to appreciate them in any way. And I just think it's such a disservice to us as humans, because then we are people who are active supporters of cancel culture. Then we are just like, I'm knocking. I'm not even going to fucking knock at the door. I'm just going to burn the house down. And it's like, okay, well, then it's just going to be you and ashes on the floor. It's going to be you and ruined floorboards and a Manolo that used to have a heel. Like, at a certain point, when are we going to say, like, we're just not doing a service to each other by being isolated? And I know that that's something that I have the privilege and benefit of saying, but I just think that, like, I don't know, at a certain point, like, when are we going to be able to find ways to connect?
I also think,
I don't know if that made any sense.
Well, I think you can compartmentalize the idea of, like, some, I might not agree with somebody on, like, a deep level politically or ideologically or, like, about certain specific issues, but it's like, I'm not buying into them as, like, a political figure or like some self-help guru that I'm going to follow to the ends of the earth. It's like, I'm watching the TV show that they're on along with six other people.
Yeah. Like, how far do we want to take this? Because at a certain point, then it's only a conversation about politics and we're forgetting why we like Housewives.
Right. And
it's
about
stories about women.
I was thinking when you were talking about like
Manolo's on the floor. Surrounded by ash.
Like all the different, like,
got a knock on glass for that. Sorry. So neurotic.
with like various, you know, franchises and things. Obviously I am more politically aligned with the casts in general. But like with a show like Miami or something, like I have a feeling like maybe half that cast, I wouldn't love to know about much more about their politics. It hasn't come up in any meaningful way, and I'm not like looking to ruin everything for myself.
And also maybe, yeah, like there are people on the cast. I think it would probably be 3/4 of the cast. I don't think it would be half the cast that you may or may not agree with politically. But it's we're watching Housewives. Feel like some of us got lost in the water a little bit.
Yeah.
And I think it's good to have conversations when they exist in the world of Housewives or not, or a connective thread. And a lot of it is because of these women themselves, the things that they've said and done. So it's like you're going to have that conversation. But also, I just think it's like a disservice to the Bravo community to get so far out of it that we're unwilling to accept or acknowledge or empathize with women because of who they voted for. Because I don't think that's the mm-hmm. It's not how Housewives was created. It in many ways shows the cracks in the foundation of Housewives because it was so far away from that idea or that talk at the beginning of the show that it's like, okay, we're trying to make things work in a structure that wasn't built in that way. It wasn't necessarily built to inform people, and some of these franchises are doing a pretty good job of it and some are not. But also, like, I don't know. I just think there's so much noise right now and so much hate and anger that people have at each other. And that people are going to express at each other, that it's like, why do I expect that people will be interested in nuance when you can't even have a basic conversation without people trying to, like, tell you to, you know, say vile and terrible things? But I don't know. I think that, like, we're pretty smart people, Housewives viewers. You're on a show that's focused on the psychology and behavior of these women. And I just think sometimes, like, if we focus on that, it's a benefit. It's a benefit to talk about women's behaviors, because then, God forbid, you might go down the line where you want to have a conversation about politics with these women, and you can, because there's a trust there, because you're talking about behavior and interest in life.
Yeah. I also think this is slightly different, but I see a lot of talk, especially this comes up in New Jersey, about people not having storylines.
Oh.
And I think that is, like, I mean, first of all, I think it's, like, a little bit of a, like, false narrative that it's, like, every housewife is supposed to have their, like, neat little storyline each season. Like, we don't actually need...
Also, what is a storyline? That's, like, a chicken and the egg
but
thing.
It's, like, but like, I conflict, saw... this
marriage,
is...
divorce...
No, I mean,
like, what terrible thing has to happen in your life for us to decide that you have enough of a storyline?
I feel like whatever about bringing this up, but, like, I've seen somebody on Twitter was like, Jackie's storyline this season is literally ice cream.
Oh my God, what a terrible
person.
And
it's like, I've seen a couple people have expressed
what a shitty person.
And it's like, first of all, I could scroll through your tweets and just, like, see right off the bat that you just
vile.
That you, like, hate Jackie. Like, it's not a thing
God, people are
on that level. It's not actually about, like, whether or not she has a compelling storyline. It's about that you're a Teresa stan, so you've decided Jackie's your worst enemy, and, like, nothing she could possibly do would be, like,
such trash.
Something you would really like. But then but also on just, like, taking that statement at face value, it's like, If you think Jackie's storyline this season is ice cream, what do you consider to be an acceptable
storyline?
Because it's like, okay, so, I mean, first of all, it's just, like, wild to me that people are so dismissive of what she's going through.
Oh my
because
God,
it's like,
total accident
first of all, it's real.
Couldn't be more serious.
Right. Like, I haven't seen anyone argue, because I think it would be extremely hard to argue that she's not being, like, authentic with what she's going through. But then it's like, if you don't think that that's a storyline acceptable for Housewives or worthy of Housewives, it's like, then what is everybody else doing? Like, I don't, okay, Teresa's, like,
moving and dating someone's maybe shitty.
Dating someone who's maybe shitty that she also isn't willing to really talk about.
Right, so there's no storyline there.
Right, so it's like, what's her storyline? I mean, like, Melissa is, like, the one who always comes up in the conversation about storylines because some of hers have been fucking ridiculous. Mm-hmm. But it's like, people are like, Melissa's storyline is her daughter's knee. And it's like, I actually thought that was a really interesting conversation that she had with Antonia the last couple of weeks about her motivation and how Melissa was depressed when she was, like, I think sometimes people get so caught up in their, like, personal likes and dislikes of these people that they're making demands or having critiques that like don't actually make sense. Mm-hmm. And it's like, if you look at like through all the years of Housewives, it's like, if you look, if like, if you take each season of each housewife and like what percentage of them had like truly like interesting storylines, it's mm-hmm. probably not that high. Like, that's not actually what the show is built on. So that honestly is something that's like always bothered me about kind of like discourse about Housewives, is that it's like, I don't actually care if everybody has a storyline. I care that you're like an interesting personality who's like contributing to the group, and maybe your storyline is just that you're like not getting along with someone.
What if we as a community and as a culture changed the term storyline, and instead of storyline we said stakes?
Yeah.
Because you look at like the Jackie thing, I can't, I like actually for my own journey, yeah. I can't get into it, but
I'm good with that.
Yeah. And it's unfortunate because I like talked about it more on Patreon. But
yeah,
it's,
no,
like,
no, no.
It's just one of those things.
We don't
things.
Need to like rehash it.
Yeah,
I just was like,
it's the stakes are so high that I'm yeah. like, ooh, let's not. But I'm so glad that you referenced this and you brought it up, because I just think for the purposes of stakes, that is an interesting conversation. Because when it gets into storyline, it almost makes me feel like these women have to sacrifice their happiness to give us content. Mm-hmm. And yeah, you could make that argument that stakes does it as well. But I also think that stakes, it's just more organic to a person's life. Because when we use the phrase storyline, which we all do, I think through the process of like production, which obviously yeah. has a big part of it, especially when conflict is so valued. But stakes to me is like, okay, how does this factor into your current life? Like, the stakes for Melissa are very high. She wants to make sure that her daughter is okay. The stakes yeah. for Jackie are very high because we're talking about her physical, literal life, and also the ways that she looks at herself through the lens of her children. Like, her relationship with her husband. There are a lot of stakes there. Like, with Teresa, you could argue that she has really big fucking stakes to try to make this work with Louis.
She's got
to
protect her love bubble.
She's got to protect her love bubble.
You're not going to pop my love bubble.
But also, like, she's through the choice of her relationship yeah. with Louis, she's making, and I don't mean this as a critique, I'm just the actual fact, her children move out of the home that, P.S., they should have moved out of years ago. So yeah. this is, like, very good for everyone. It's healthy. But it is sad and difficult to ask these kids, and she's doing it with a lot of love, like, this is not a critique of her, to leave the place that is the biggest example and attachment, physical representation and manifestation of their father, who's not allowed back in this state, united or otherwise, like general or specific. And she's saying, because of this man, you're going on right. this ride with me. The stakes are extremely high for her. You look at Marge talking about her relationship with her mom. The stakes are really high. Jen Aiden's fucking marriage and cultural.
Yeah, I mean, hers. Yeah, I love
representation, gender dynamics, huge.
My I think from the beginning of this season,
and Dolores is there.
Yeah,
no, Dolores has big stakes with her mom. And
from the beginning of this season to where we are now, I think my view on Jennifer's position on the show has actually changed a lot.
Oh, tell me.
Because I think at the beginning of the season, I kind of felt like she was in dangerous territory, because it felt like she didn't really have anybody on her side in the group, because it was mm-hmm. like you had, you know, she and Jackie were getting along for like one episode and then they weren't. And it was clear that, first of all, Margaret wasn't trying to fuck with Jennifer. Was not a fan. Mm. Melissa was not, you know, team Jen, no surprise. Mm-hmm. And it seemed pretty apparent that Teresa didn't actually care about going to bat for her.
Right.
The way that Jen, I think, would no doubt go to bat for Teresa.
And has.
And so it was kind of like, okay, yeah, like Dolores is like friends with her, but like kind of just like because 3 and 3-ish.
Right. yeah.
But like, I kind of felt like at the beginning of the season, it was like, oh, like this could be a really rough season for Jennifer in terms of the group, because it's like, if Teresa is going to be preoccupied with mm-hmm. tending the love bubble, and mm-hmm. You know, Jennifer, and it just is tough to be in a defensive position kind of on your own.
Yeah,
and
without
I think
support, very isolating.
Yeah, but now because of Teresa's horrid behavior, honestly, Jennifer has almost like catapulted herself into like kind of good standing with most of the women. I think that that conversation that she had with Margaret a couple episodes ago really felt like kind of a turning point to me, that it was like, okay, you and Margaret have so much baggage with each other, that you've been so nasty to each other, and you know, for whatever side you're on, I'm kind of a little bit team no one in their dynamic, because it's like they've just both been like,
they've both fucked up.
Yeah, they've both been like kind of hateful to each other, and it is what it is. And the fact that they had that lunch or whatever it was together and were really, I thought, leveling with each other and having a really seemed like honest conversation and getting to a better place. I think Jackie is way more understanding of Jennifer this season, especially now kind of knowing that Teresa was the one who told her to dig. And Dolores, I think, has sort of stepped up the way that Jennifer said she needed her to. And so it's interesting going into the end of this season that I'm like, all of a sudden, I'm kind of like, if anyone is on the ropes in this cast, I would almost say it's Teresa, which sounds, which feels like a crazy thing to say because it's the Teresa show. But like,
Nashville's coming.
But I, right. Like, I feel like with what we have left and with, you know, tidbits that I've heard about the reunion, it does not seem like Teresa is going to end this season in a good place
with the rest of the cast.
Right. And I don't know whether that means that Teresa's spot on the show would be in danger, because I don't know if that's something that
I don't think that would happen. Yeah, I don't think that's anywhere close to being on the table.
Just in terms of like her standing within the group, I think it's telling that the season that Teresa has found love and is allegedly so happy is likely going to be one of her worst seasons in terms of the relationships with the other women. And sort of, I feel like the other women are maybe getting to a point where they don't feel like they have to just be like deferential to Teresa at all times, which not like everybody always has. It's not like nobody's ever gone up against Teresa, but then it's also like, yeah, like we're all fine. Everybody's been on the show for four seasons at least now. There's no newbie within the group except for poor Tracy with the hair extensions. With those hair extensions.
I can't even see them. Isn't that terrible? I can't even see her face in my head. I'm so sorry to her.
But it's like, it's the kind of thing where it's like, I think Teresa is going to have some soul searching to do in the off season about her position on the show. I could see her leaving by choice. I don't know.
I don't see that happening anytime
in the near future. I don't necessarily think it will, but I feel like for the first time, I'm like, I can envision it happening.
That's interesting.
Even if I don't necessarily, if I don't think it's the most likely outcome, I'm like, maybe she could. She might.
I don't disagree with what you're saying, but I, you know, rewatch the Jersey After Show, which, guys, if you're not watching the After Shows on YouTube, it's just top tier. Honestly, the content is so great for Jersey and Orange County. But the way that Jennifer seems to triple down on her just blanket defense of Teresa and going after the other women on the After Show is so both surprising and, I guess, unsurprising, because we're watching her muddle in a little bit of the gray right now, where she's like, wow, I guess I really kind of like lost something with having women really being there to support me by aligning so closely with Teresa. We're watching her appreciate olive branches that she's extending and that have been extended her way. And yet in real time, seemingly on the After Show, she's like, everybody can go fuck themselves. And Teresa, you're of course always right. And it's just, I just wonder what happens. What happened to make that shift? Did she feel the pressure of needing to be a perfect seeming ally or friend to Teresa? Or did something happen where she decided that all of these, everybody else can go fuck themselves?
Yeah, I don't know the answer. I do think it feels at this point on Jersey, because the cast has been so consistent over the past few years, it feels like Melissa Dolores and not Melissa Dolores, Melissa, Margaret, and Jackie, they feel like really authentic friends to me. Mm-hmm. And I don't know how much
wait,
they're
Melissa, Margaret, and Jackie. Yeah, I think they're genuinely like, good friends.
I don't know how much they're seeing each other when they're not filming. I don't know how much they're talking, but like, for what it's worth, on the show, I genuinely believe that the three of them care for each other, talk, know what's going on in each other's lives, are like good friends. Mm-hmm. And I think Dolores has that long-standing friendship with Teresa. I don't know if they're super close at this point, but I feel
there's
like...
there's so much trust but, there.
Right. There's yeah. that bond there and that basis of a friendship. Mm-hmm. And I think because of those two kind of dynamics, mm-hmm. Jennifer really is the one person in that cast that doesn't have like a good, true friend, maybe.
Isn't that sad? Because she needs one right now.
It is sad.
It does.
Well, yeah, I think that's the sad thing. And I think that's why this season, as the season has gone on, it's been heartening to me to see her get to a little bit of a better place with Jackie and with Margaret, because she truly does need it. And I think that Margaret, as much as she can be kind of a, you know, an asshole sometimes, mm-hmm. and, you know, talk more shit than she needs to, mm-hmm. we got to a point where I think she really, it clicked for her that it was like, oh, Jennifer is like not in a good place. Mm-hmm. And maybe that's my fault. Maybe it's the fault of the universe or of Bill, but like whatever happened to get her there, I don't want to make it worse.
Right.
And I don't know if I would ever say that I think Margaret is like the best friend in the world or like going to be like a total ally to Jennifer going forward. But I appreciated that in that one moment, it was like, you know what? I'm not going to kick you right now when you're down.
Yeah. And also, I didn't realize that you were as far down as you seem, as I've now learned that you are.
Right. And I know you you are a big fan of the idea of changing your mind when you're presented.
Normalize changing your mind based on new information.
And I felt like that was a good correction from absolutely. Margaret. And I think Margaret is one of those people where she is really good at housewives. She's good at the game, and I think she has fun with it a lot of the time, sort of at the expense of some other people, namely Jennifer. Mm. But like, she also is a real person who has like social skills. Mm-hmm. And in that moment was like, oh, I don't need to do this right now. Like, this isn't, it's not fun. It's not like fun when it, like when they're screaming at each other at the shore house, it's like, yeah, like go for it. Do whatever you want.
Right.
Say your concubine or whatever. That's what Housewives is supposed to be. Like, mm-hmm. anybody who says that it's like, I don't like to see women fight. It's like, respectfully, like, watch a different show. Like, you know what you're signing up for. But, like, I do appreciate that these women all know each other. Mm-hmm. It is a real group, even if it's just a group of coworkers. They've worked together for long enough now that there's no kind of, like, rando. Mm-hmm. It's Tracy, again. But, like, I like that Margaret, in that moment, can kind of, like, put aside her bullshit and be like, okay, like, I know we just fought, but are you okay? Like,
well, and also, how would you ever think that this person hadn't talked about this or worked through when their sole mission is to bring up the same fucking topic when there were rumors about somebody else's spouse? If I was in Margaret's position, I would think this is so hypocritical because we all know what happened with Bill. And obviously, I assume that you have worked through it in some way because you're so focused on the same topic when it comes to somebody else, and that's where the hypocrisy remains. And that has been the startling and interesting thing and nuanced aspect of this when it comes to Jen, the fact that she really, truly buried it deep inside and is now a decade later dealing with it. I mean, that's really interesting. This is the glory of this show, of like, just when you think you sort of understand a person, they're sort of broken open, you know? Mm-hmm. And hopefully it doesn't always require immense pain, but there's a lot of value in understanding the ways that we make caricatures of each other, ourselves, and the women that we watch on screen. And then there's like, oh, wait, there's a human person underneath. Look at that.
I don't know. I'm excited for the reunion. I'm a little nervous, but I do feel like...
She does yell. Against doctor's order, she yells.
Oh my God. I do feel like we got to find a new housewife in New Jersey.
No, we don't.
No, I
know we don't.
I only say that not because I think there's anything wrong with the current cast. Some people are very like, it's so stale. And I just don't.
Oh my God, no.
I don't think so. But it makes me nervous that the last two women that they've brought in as the new blood, Michelle, realtor Michelle.
Ugh, so dumb.
And Tracy have been like, to me, complete flops.
100%.
I mean, I respect that Tracy's trying.
And she has a real genuine relationship with Melissa, which should matter. Yeah.
I don't think necessarily it's Tracy's fault this season that she's flopped, agree. But she has flopped. And it makes me nervous that maybe it's not like, obviously, like casting the last couple seasons hasn't felt like there needs to be some great shakeup, mm-hmm. but it's like you would hope that whoever they're bringing onto the show in a potential new role is somebody that they think has like genuine potential to be great, because you shouldn't be like operating at, you shouldn't be half-assing it. And so like, it makes me nervous that the last two times they've been like, okay, we found someone new. Mm-hmm. They've just like not risen up to the challenge. And so I would like to see them for next season at least find one person that is like, can actually even just like be a full-time housewife for one season. Like, I don't know. I don't think that the cast needs like a shakeup, mm-hmm. but it's like one new person isn't a shakeup. It's just like,
yeah,
casting.
No, that's a good point.
And the last two seasons, there theoretically would have been a new housewife if the new housewife had like had the goods.
And in Tracy's defense, the women on New Jersey are so overwhelming. They're so large. They loom large. They act yeah. large. That she is participating in things. She is responsive. She's like using her voice with Teresa and otherwise. I just don't. She gets swallowed up in this dynamic. It's just. We never got an introduction to her because she wasn't given to us as a. She wasn't presented right. to us as a housewife. So it's not like she came in and was meek. She's not that at all. And there's also a place for housewives to behave that way in the world, ideally. But I just don't think that she's not the one that I think you're talking about when you talk about having somebody, you know, right.
like
full time.
The fact that the last new housewives we had were
no
Jen and Jackie.
Oh, yeah. I thought you were going to say something else and I was already upset. Yeah.
What did you think I was going to say?
I thought you were going to talk about the twins and Amber. Oh, and no, we're not talking about them. They never happened. They never.
No. We've gotten Dolores, Margaret. Yeah. But like the fact that Jen and Jackie, I think, were sort of like slow burns in a way that it was like not that. I mean, Jennifer, I guess, always kind of was. Was like loaded, ready to go, mm-hmm. but like I don't think after their first season or even two, mm-hmm. people necessarily saw them as like top tier or whatever. Mm-hmm. It really took a while, but like now, at least for me, and maybe not everybody agrees, but like Jennifer and Jackie were like great casting on this show, and the fact that they were both able to
survive
and work their way into the group yep. in a really meaningful way. I mean, mm-hmm. I was just saying that Margaret, Jackie, and Melissa have that friendship. Like the fact that Jackie really like has built that with Melissa, who mm-hmm. is Melissa is always going to be kind of one of the like two pillars as long as mm-hmm. Teresa's on the show. And like, I think in a way, you know, Gina and Emily have kind of been the same, been a similar vibe that it's like two seasons ago, even last season, when after season 15, the like season from hell, when they were saying, oh, we're going to do a reboot. When I was talking with people about like who to get rid of, I'm like, well, obviously Emily. And like even
we would have lost
like one season later. I'm like, well, thank God she's there, because otherwise we wouldn't have this like through right. line. Who knows what would be happening? We would be stuck with like having to care about Dr. Jen, which would
be awful.
Which would like my be I would rather terrible. Have my teeth pulled. but it's like, I think there is something to be said for like housewives can like people on Housewives can like
surprise us,
surprise you, and also really like grow into their roles.
Totally.
Both on the show and like as people. Human people. Mm-hmm. I mean, Gina is like, to me, like prime example number one, like the journey that we've seen her go through in the last few seasons. And like, even like 2 seasons ago, I think was when her hair was a fucking mess. She was like getting divorced. Mm. It was really going through it. Mm-hmm. That was when she got her DUI. Like, mm-hmm. it was just like bad stuff. Like, it was not a good time in her life. And I think there were people that would have been like, oh, like, get her off the show. Like, she's not rich. She's a mess. Like, blah, 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 blah. Which, like, I feel like I didn't care about her that much mm-hmm. at that time. But, like, now it's like, first of all, like, I'm proud of her.
Yeah.
On a just, like, a human level, like, turning her shit around. She seems so happy with Travis. I love that relationship yes. for her. Like, the blended family, her dynamic with her ex. Like, all of that seems, like, so good. But also, it's like, she's delivered so much as a housewife. Like, without Gina and Emily, this season would literally just be... I mean, I'm sure there would be other people if they weren't there. But, like, we would have, like, 2 arguments between Shannon and Heather and then just, like, Noella. Like, what would be happening?
We wouldn't have the arguments with Shannon and Heather because Heather wouldn't have known that Shannon told them.
Yeah.
There's
maybe
a lot here.
Maybe Nicole Weiss would be holding an orange. Nicole Weiss!
Oh my God, the rumors about her are fascinating. Listen, we've recorded for a hot minute, but is there any way, even though I didn't ask you about this before, but it occurred to me, because you know when I start talking to you, I can truly never stop. Do you want to do a little Patreon?
Yeah, we could do un petit peu de Patreon.
Okay, guys, so we're going to shift to Patreon, because there's some shit that like we talked about before recording that I do want to get on the public record. Literally, when it comes to some news about New York, I can't even talk about it. It's like about really serious things.
Hi.
Okay, so we're gonna, and I do want to talk to you about Noella because we haven't talked about her at length. And when it comes to reboots and casting, I want to get your thoughts. But listen, in the meantime, tell the AGs about your pods. You're a pod maven. You have a pod, a pod industry, and your social. You guys all follow Bravo by Betches. But Dylan Hafer, please mention it all. How can we support you in all of your different phenomenal endeavors?
Yeah, so I host for Betches Media. I host our Bravo podcast, Mention It All. We do 3 normal episodes a week with rotating guests. Super fun. We're recapping shows, getting general thoughts. It's a whole mixed bag of content. And then right now I'm also doing solo mini episodes on Friday that are Ooh. Top Chef recaps, which I'm having so much fun with because Top Chef is just like joyous television experience. And so I just like talk to myself for 15 minutes about it every week. And then I also host a podcast called Pop Alarm, which is pop culture and celebrity entertainment news. And it is 5 days a week, little 5-minute short, sweet episodes, just kind of bullet point updates of all the stories that are happening. So, yeah, it's a good way to kind of, if you're not like extremely online the way that I am in a bad way, it's a good way to kind of get caught up. And yeah, you can follow me on Instagram at Dylan Hafer.
And also your Bravo Instagram.
Yes, of course. Well, you mentioned that. But follow at Bravo by Betches for lots of memes and updates and fun quizzes and polls.
And I also have to say, maybe we'll talk about this on the Patreon too, but like, if you follow Bravo by Betches, it is absolutely mandatory that you follow Dylan's personal, because for many reasons, and you're so funny, as we all know well, but your recommendations, especially for non-Bravo TV content and movies, it's like I go into your highlights. I texted you the other day and was like, what was that thing that you said like literally 6 years ago that was like with people who are famous? And then I'm like, wait, he has fucking highlights. And I went through and was like, oh, okay, this is the Netflix movie that I want to watch next. Like, I cannot more highly recommend, because I think your taste is just always spot on. Your reviews are really, really helpful. And I'm always on the lookout for a new non-Bravo TV binge, so I just highly recommend.
Yeah,
and they're saved on your highlights.
I watch just too many things. That's kind of the same. That's kind of the thing. So like, I tell you if something is worth your time.
Okay, we need to talk about We Crashed too. Oh, we're gonna talk about that on Patreon. I have so many thoughts.
I think we can all agree that there should not be a fuck closet.
Should I mean, do we? Listen, guys, follow me on Instagram at Dame Gally. The Patreon, the number one way to support Andy's Girls, patreon.com/Andy's Girls. As I mentioned earlier, there's a 40 minute plus SG of the AG exclusive where I do a live reaction to the Beverly Hills trailer. And Dylan and I are going to return to the Patreon People's Couch. And you get exclusive bonus episodes, invites to special Zoom kikis, and more. So that's patreon.com/Andy's Girls. We're about to record an episode that'll be up while you're listening to this one. And Instagram, did I say at Dame Gally? I don't know if
you probably
did
but yeah. Say it again.
Dame Gally is where I am. Took the week off of essentially everything, and I just have to highly recommend that if anyone is feeling any kind of anything, I just was dealing with like anxiety that took a turn, just in the sense of like, ooh, I need to actually practice the self-care of which I sometimes espouse. And I just highly recommend that if you find yourself too online, just taking a couple days of genuinely logging out so you don't get notifications or anything. It is restorative. So if you're thinking after you follow me on social, get off of it. Take a couple days off. Watch We Crashed on Apple TV, which we're going to talk about. Watch some non-Bravo content, because sometimes this world can get a little hot. And just, you know, find ways to enjoy, I think, being with yourself. That was kind of the lesson that I learned from the past week that I highly recommend. And thanks to those who checked in and sent me some sass and all that good stuff. I think that, you know, we're still dealing with quite a lot, as we know. And if you're just hopefully there to look out for yourself and do what makes you feel good and feel good right now, I think that's a pretty good plan. On that note, guys, we're going to talk shit about the people on Patreon. So we'll talk shit with y'all soon. Bye-bye.